My friend Daniel Hatke is an entrepreneur and deep thinker about life. I loved this conversation with him because I got to ask him all the questions that I don't usually have an excuse to ask him. He has a very unique perspective on entrepreneurship because he's seen multiple, lived multiple lives, I guess you could say, even though he's still relatively young. He has played the finance CTO Wall Street game as well as the mostly self-funded, at least entrepreneur game. And so we got to, with that in mind, dig deep into the choices that he's made to pursue entrepreneurship, how he finds meaning and fulfillment in it, contrasting his current, you know, risk portfolio, stress portfolio, against that of his former life doing, you know, in the financial services world. It was just a great conversation. I'm so excited to bring it to you. Let's get into it. Welcome to the Meaning Movement podcast. We know you want to build a stress-free life and business that gives you the financial freedom and lifestyle that you want. In order to do that, you have to eliminate the conflict between your work and the rest of your life. But the problem is, running a business is hard and requires sacrifice and commitment, leaving you feeling depleted, exhausted, and even burned out. But we believe that every entrepreneur deserves to recapture the motivation and energy they need to run their business. And that is what this show is all about. I'm your host, Dan Cumberland. Go ahead and hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening, and let's go. Daniel, welcome to the Meaning Movement podcast. So excited to have you here on the show with me.
Absolutely excited to be here too, Dan. It's a real honor. Appreciate the invite.
Love it. The question I'd like to begin with is, how do you begin to talk about the work that you do?
I talk about it in terms of entrepreneurship through acquisition. That, you know, kind of keyword or words has gotten more and more steam and more popularity in the past, 3-5 years. And I was lucky to sort of stumble into it, thought it was a cool idea, and went down that rabbit hole, and have acquired one business so far, and we are continuing to look, but we're picky, and I only do it with my own money, so it's not like we're on a big spree. It's more, I talk about it in terms of building a family of small family businesses.
A family of families. I love it.
Yeah, exactly.
What types of businesses?
E-commerce specifically. So we have two e-commerce businesses. One is more the real operating business right now, and it's in the sports nutrition space. So we do pre-workout, post-workout, amino acids, that sort of thing. And it's been really fun. It's a tiny little company. It's just my wife and I run it together, and it's taught us a lot. We continue to learn. We continue to make mistakes and iterate. And we've got some of the best customers in the world.
I love that. So great. So I want to just rewind and just ask the question of, like, how did you get into this, you know, this corner of entrepreneurship? And I want to ask the question. Tell me, like, the history of your relationship with being an entrepreneur, of that piece of your identity.
Yeah, that's interesting. I still wrestle with even being able to have the privilege of calling myself an entrepreneur, right? Like,
yeah, same.
You know, I didn't start this business. I bought it off of a few guys that that are true entrepreneurs and built this cool little business that I now have the pleasure of running. But how I ended up stumbling into it was through graduate school, actually. So I went to business school, and there is a concept called search funds, and also a thing that's gotten a lot more steam recently. But it used to be sort of in the confines of, you know, Harvard, Stanford, Wharton kind of thing.
Yeah.
But that's where I got introduced to the idea. So I kind of explored raising money and trying to find a business to buy. Then I realized more of who I am and how I want to live, is have more control and more flexibility in my life. Mm. And doing it alone was going to be, you know, a much smaller game. But it was going to be able to afford me some of the things that I wanted that weren't just money. So that's sort of what drove me in that direction. And that catalyst of finding the idea happened at B School.
I love it. Can you just contrast with, for me, you know, for folks who are maybe kind of less familiar with the world, like with this world, not the world in general, right? like contrast a little bit, like, because it feels like a very clear decision to be like, okay, I'm not going to go that traditional route. And like you said, like it's a, you want a different lifestyle and there's a trade-off there. And so maybe could you contrast that choice, like what your life looks like now versus what it would possibly have looked like if you'd gone down that path?
Yeah. So my past is in financial services on the technology side of things. So this is a world where some of the things you see on TV are true. Most of them aren't, but it's filled with incredibly bright, driven people. And if you want to have the pleasure of working in that industry, you have to be all of those things and show up and be there a lot. Mm-hmm. I loved it for the time in my life that I did it. But I also, you know, there was a point where if I want to have a family and I want to see the kids more than 2 hours, Monday through Friday, I was going to have to make changes. Right. And so that's the main catalyst. That's the main reason or push for me to have explored different ways of doing things and sort of bucking the trend of more.
Yeah, I love that. I mean, I think like that's such a necessary trend to can you say to buck? That's not how we usually use that phrase, but like,
well, it's a terribly tough balance.
Yeah.
Right. Like, and also like you can step out on your own and find yourself working even more.
Yes.
Because the buck stops here kind of thing, right? Yes. Like I've got to put food on the table. I'm not a W-2. I can't just collect the paycheck. Yes. So there's added stress. There's no like, this is the way everyone should do it this way. It's more, I thought I had some skills and some ability to go do this and it's worked in my favor so far. That doesn't mean it will always work in my favor. But you know, I took the dive. I've loved it so far and I hope I continue loving it.
Are you glad? Glad you did? Do you ever have those nights when you're like, did I make the wrong choice?
Well, obviously the answer is yes.
I wake up at 3 a.m. sometimes. I'm like, what am I doing with my life? Where did the last 10 years go? You know?
There's that or like a terribly large unexpected expense or looking at the past 2 years, a huge shift in the world that you can't plan for or try to get ahead of. And you just find yourself in a very different situation than what you had imagined for yourself. And that's definitely a situation that we're in now. But, you know, you just keep at it.
Yeah.
As you would with it. I mean, you know, if you have a regular job, you could get fired tomorrow.
Yes.
So there, it doesn't matter which route you go. There's going to be challenges, and it's more about how you react to them and how you think about them and how you talk to yourself about them to get through it.
I love it. I just think it's such a good point that like there's always risk. And it's easy to point at, you know, the W-2 and the capital J job.
Yeah,
there's an attraction to it. And say that's safe, right? Yeah. And to say that it's safe or more reliable or whatever might be the case when the reality is it's just a different set of risks. And so you just kind of have to choose the risks that you're willing to tolerate, in my opinion.
Risks that you're willing to tolerate or what sort of mission that you're on in this particular season in your life. And what plans you have for the next season kind of thing.
Yeah. I love that. I think of like the financial services base. And like, as you're talking about, you know, the Stanford and like these, you know, the MBA, I want to say like the MBA guys, because they're not just guys, but traditionally, you know, but, there's like definitely a stereotype there. And it also, but it feels like, I don't even know what my question is around this, but I just want to get your perspective on it. Like, there's this small class of extraordinarily wealthy people, or people who have the right set of skills, the right set of access, the right set of network to become extraordinarily wealthy. And they kind of run the world in a lot of ways, which I don't think it's like a conspiracy or like maybe an oligarchy or something like that. But I've always, you know, since that feels very far from my world, though it, I guess, maybe runs parallel in some ways as far as entrepreneurship. It is a very different path towards entrepreneurship than I've been on, which is much more scrappy. Emphasis on scrappy. And I don't know. I've always just felt like, I almost want to say it's unfair, like the amount of power that those people have. And there isn't a question here other than like, I know that you brush shoulders with that demographic, and I'm curious your thoughts on that.
Yeah. I have many of the same thoughts, even having been inside the system.
Yeah.
You know, I come from small town Indiana. I knew one kid in high school that got accepted to Yale, and he didn't go. Mm-hmm. The Ivy League was not, or even more than just the Ivy League, those schools weren't sort of even on my radar, right? It wasn't what my family talked about. It wasn't what I had access to. So I went to, you know, the school in my backyard. It's a big state school. And then, I don't know, I worked a few jobs locally after school. And then I had some friends in New York. They called me up and said, hey, let's have you move out here, kind of thing. So I moved to New York with Carry On. And from there, it's just a string of luck, really. Anybody who's not citing luck as some portion of their success is lying to you or themselves, kind of thing. But it was a crazy time. Didn't have a job, didn't have a plan, had signed up for a rent bill that was, you know, 3x what my parents' mortgage was, and just had to make a go of it, and was lucky to have found a job in hedge funds. There was a guy that I interviewed with that, you know, to this day, I credit him with having taken a chance on me, and I ended up getting a great mentor and friend out of it. Worked under him for over 5 years. And that's what got me into this, I don't know, crazy world called hedge funds that people don't really understand. And popular culture paints a picture that is not necessarily accurate. Most hedge funds fail. Most of them are tiny. You know, and the ones I worked at, I've never worked at a place with more than like 30 people. These are tiny businesses. They just happen to have, they manage a bunch of money, but really the business itself is rather well-funded, but small. And I don't know, from there, I love the job. It was, like I said, you know, bright, driven, all those things, and super intense, big personalities. You don't get to the top of, you don't get to go start your own hedge fund back in those days without, even now probably, without being super type A driven. Networked, all of those things, right? So then came another sort of, how do I call it? Because I don't want it to be negative. It's just like this feeling, it was mostly in my own head, of if I want to be on a different side of this business rather than being a cost center. You know, I was the guy making the servers work and making sure the data flowed and, you know, all those sorts of things. If I wanted to be on another side of the business, it was, I felt like, and I was telling myself the story that I too had to go get this kind of pedigree. And which I think is now, like in retrospect, a terrible motivation for trying to spend a lot of money on a graduate degree. Yes.
We all have our reasons. I could tell you my story of but it was what needed to happen for me personally at the time.
Exactly. And that's still how I look at it. So, my experience in B-School was awesome, just surrounded by amazing people, all of them doing amazing things and have gone on to continue doing amazing things. And it's a fantastic institution, or my feelings of it, having participated in it, right? And, everyone's super nice and helpful. It was collaborative, all of those things. I was driven to basically say to those around me, like, you don't think I can do it, but I can. And I did. I got accepted to Columbia. It was an absolutely wonderful experience. And somewhere in between, studying for the GMAT and getting all that ramped up, I'd left that first job after 5-ish years and, became CTO at a different hedge fund that was a very, very, very different place from the one that I'd come from, both in terms of like what they invested in and how they invested to the culture. It was fun to, just take a complete, it wasn't a 180, but it was very different. And again, met a bunch of bright, driven, awesome people and worked for a guy who I still admire today. And it was great. So anyway, that takes us all the way up to sort of like me finishing my experience with New York and experience with Columbia and experience with hedge funds. And then there's this kind of, strong, dark line in my timeline. And yes. After graduating, marrying my wife, and then, a handful of months later, quit everything in New York, packed up boxes, and then flew to Milan, and my wife and I traveled for a year, which was a total privilege to be able to do. But that time was what allowed me to sort of put separation between me, my own ambitions, the story that I had been telling myself, to find a different story and to be more true to myself. And make different choices based on different motivations. And that's it. Like, you can see that play out in my life.
Mm. Wow. I love everything that you just said, and thank you so much for sharing so much of your story. I'm curious just about the story. This, you mentioned the story that you were telling yourself and how that shifted. Could you contrast those two stories for us?
Yeah. I didn't grow up in a moneyed environment. We didn't do poorly. But my parents both worked hard for what we had. And I wanted to work hard too, but I wanted to make more. Mm. That got put in my brain somewhere very early.
Yeah.
And moving to New York and getting my hedge fund job and I was definitely on the side of the business that didn't make gobs and gobs of money, but it was New York City and money's different there. And I did okay. And I was very motivated by that. And that story hadn't changed or really updated, right? Mm-hmm. So given two different opportunities, and this is kind of a real moment that happened to me. Being on an interview, doing well, and being told what the offer would be from a company that was exploratory and curious and was more creating content and doing some consulting, it would have been a really fascinating job. And I think I would have learned a lot, but it would have been a pretty significant pay cut. And I didn't take it. Because that's the track that I was on and what I was motivated by, right?
Yeah.
And I still, clearly, I remember that moment. I still think about it. And I don't know, you have to be more... it's a privilege to be more honest with yourself, but also just try to be more honest with yourself, right? Mm. So those seeds have been sown at some point. I knew it, but didn't know it. And it's sometime during that year off where I didn't imagine myself wanting to go back and doing hour-long commutes and being at the office from 7 to 7 or more, right? Mm. I don't know.
That's great.
That's kind of where...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you feel like it was just like your experience of life outside of the office that caused that shift to happen? Or was it like... It feels like something in you kind of... I don't want to say woke up, but like there's... Your lens changed and... what invited that change for you?
Yeah. I don't know how else to say it other than being more honest with myself.
Yeah.
Right. Like I think, and that's why I tell the story about that one interview, that one piece of another piece of luck that I didn't chase. Right.
Yeah.
Cause that shows that at that time in my life, I wasn't necessarily being honest with myself. And at some point I, you know, like you said, woke up, right? Like I started listening, or there were other things that were more important and I started actually giving them the chance to have priority rather than saying, you know, of these 5, 10, whatever things, I'm focused on this one right now. Mm-hmm. And trying to open up that portfolio a little bit of where do I want to go? Why? Mm-hmm. What meaning is there? What are your motivations? What does an end goal look like?
Yeah.
And, you know, listen, I still don't have answers to many of those things, but they're being updated daily.
I love the update. I mean, you said like that your story hadn't updated and it just kind of, I just remind me of, you know, I have a Mac and I'll get like, you know, a new update, click the button, it downloads. And like, sometimes it's just stuff happens and you don't really see it a lot, but then like over time, like things change. It's like, oh, there's a new icon there, or they're like, oh, there's like, I don't know, there's new features or whatever that like, and I thought it's just a really great way to think about like the stories that we tell ourselves, like, that one, they should be updated, you know, intentionally revisited and asked like, is this the story that we want to be choosing to follow or, you know, guide our lives in accordance with, but then two, like, even just to kind of take stock of like, okay, the story has updated, but is my reality, does my reality match the story? And so I think it's just a really fun metaphor to kind of play with.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And there was a book that my brother gave me recently. It's called Chatter by Ethan Cross. I think he's a professor at Michigan or something like that. And he talks about like the stories that we tell ourselves, the way we talk to ourselves, right? Mm. And I only read this recently, but I can imagine like if I had read the book a long time ago or something, changing being able or more empowered to make some of these changes earlier. Mm-hmm. Because he talks about like addressing yourself in the third person. That's the main idea to take away from the book, is addressing it in your own thoughts when you're talking to yourself, addressing yourself in the third person, separating yourself for a little bit. And it allows you to be able to be separate from oneself. But really, like, many of us are really good at giving our friends advice, but we're not necessarily good at giving ourselves advice, right? And this technique kind of helps that a little bit, because then you can go and talk to yourself in a completely different way, and it's pretty cool.
Yes, I love it. I love it. I had I'm blanking on his name. He's a running coach on the show, which is great for me to geek out about running. But he's talking about this idea and some of the self talk. Because I asked him like the question, like how much of running is actually just mental versus like your body, you know? And he's like, oh, it's like 90%. I mean, you can't like put aside the body, but. But he was stating that like just some of the mental game of running and like that third person piece, which I had never heard before. So it's the second time that that's been pointed out. And he also said like talking to yourself out loud and saying your own name, addressing yourself in the third person out loud, takes those stories, takes the things that you're saying, and just gives them more power, more weight, which is just really, really fascinating stuff.
Yeah,
so, I love it. I love it.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, yeah, I wouldn't, you know, you could do that walking down my little suburban street and people are probably thinking you're crazy, but on the streets of New York City, it's just, you know, it's fine.
Just keep your earbuds in and they'll just think you're on the phone.
That's true. Yeah, we've all got cover now.
Yeah. Everybody's crazy. I love it. We'll get right back to our conversation, but I wanted to give a quick shout out to our sponsor. This episode in this season of the podcast is brought to you by 923.co, a web and mobile app development team that I have been working directly with for more than a year, building VideoSnap. VideoSnap.io, if you don't know, is the software that I built to repurpose long-form speech-based content, like this podcast, into short-form viral-ready videos. Think TikTok, YouTube Shorts, Reels, etc. If you're making content and you want to be found in the algorithms, you should be using VideoSnap. I've been building directly with 923, and they are a phenomenal team with a strong track record of building high-quality apps. They've built more than 50 apps. Those apps have gone on to do more than $1 billion for their clients, which is incredible. I'm also now contributing to their team in a product strategy role, which means if you have a dream that you want to realize with software, not only should you talk to 923 because they are so good at software, but I could help you directly build that with them. Go to 923.co, all spelled out, 9-N-I-N-E-T-W-O-T-H-R-E-E.co, and find out more. Thanks so much. Now back to the show. I'm curious just about, you know, the end goal, and I know you don't. No.
Yeah, I don't know. I can paint a picture.
What do you know?
What I know is that I want to keep this flexibility. I want to be a present father and husband. Those are super top priorities for me. Got a daughter that's almost 2 and a son on the way, and those things are really important to me. But I also know that I have to provide for them. I want to be able to pay for the college if college is still a thing 16 years from now. And you know, all that goes with it. Right. And I'm, you know, I'll happily admit that, like, I like nice things and, you know, all the stuff. Right. So it's, I want to do well by myself and by my family. But in order to do that, I look at it in terms of, instead of just looking at, you know, your W-2 and saying, like, I make a boatload of money because I work really hard and I'm never around, more just a bunch of different income streams. Slowly build them up. Pay attention to them. You know, water the flowers, if you will, and do right by customers and clients and all that sort of thing in order to provide value. I'm in the business of providing value to people, and as long as that is working, they should stick around. We should have revenue. We should be able to keep the lights on. And if there's, you know, extra money left over and we keep our lifestyles as reasonable, but, you know, don't let them inflate. Then we should be able to turn some of that extra cash into assets, and the assets will appreciate. And, you know, but to me, in my mind, this is super simple, and I understand that it's, like, going to take years and lots of work. And to some people, it's not simple, or they haven't been exposed to these ideas. And that's one of the things that a friend of mine and I are trying to work on, is like exposing more people to these ideas. So that people feel that they can enable themselves, right? Even if, I don't care how much you make, right? If you're able to sock away some extra money, there's things that you can do with that money. And you also might find some fulfillment in it, right? Through different, you know, creativity, or, you know, that, like, say you do well and you're like, this thing that I'm going to buy, every dollar it makes is going to go straight to this charity I care about a lot. That's something. Like, there's no wrong answers. Find ways to do it. And the pie just, you know, it's not static. You can, the pie can be grown. So, I don't know, that paints the picture of the past, maybe. Where it ends up, who knows, you know?
Yeah, I love it. It's like, you can see the pie the pie tin, and you've got like a couple slices in place, and you're just kind of filling out the rest of the pie.
I got some apples in the backyard. We can.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good way to think of it. I know where the trees are, at least, so I can go pick the apples from. Just got to figure out how to get there. That's so good, so good. I know we've talked about some of my framework of the four P's, which are, you know, the people, the process, the product, the profit, and, you know, so I'm always using that lens as I'm engaging with people's stories, and I hear that very present in, I think, some of that shift in your life. I'm curious just how, I know you've been kind of thinking through that framework a little bit. Curious to hear some of your reflections on those four areas.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a really useful way to think about all these things, because those are the main drivers, right? I wrote some notes down just to make sure that, like, that I'm thinking about some of the things that have happened to me. And, you know, going back to that, like, stark line in my timeline, right? There's the before and there's the after. And thinking about that 4P framework, the stories and the things that I wrote down are very different from, there's things that relate to one another, but like, they're very different. I thought about the process part in my prior life, because there were things that, like, you know, day to day, like, I got to do interesting things, right? Like, we had a budget, I got to buy big pieces of equipment and make new cool things happen for the business that made everyone's lives better, their productivity higher. They were able to spend more time thinking about things that mattered rather than moving numbers around because there was no better way to do it, that sort of stuff, right? And so I was always driven by that. That was always a lot of fun. But I really dig a good crisis, and there were no shortages of crises. Most of them imagined, but some of them are real. One of the places I worked at, we were 15 yards off the Hudson River, and when Hurricane Sandy came in, our whole first floor was on 3 feet of water, and our server room was where?
Oh no.
And, you know, the market shut down, so we were fine for a little bit, but like, it was supposed to open on Wednesday or something like that. So, you know, I'm standing in water, we're doing extension cords and moving servers up.
Wild.
But, you know, in a good crisis, you see people come to play ball, team players come out, creativity goes up, you got to solve problems. So those are things I really enjoyed. Luckily, there's not a lot of crisis in my life now. They're mostly dull and frustrating rather than those sort of acute sense-heightening experiences. Something I struggle with now is sort of not being alone, but like, it's my wife and I. There's no other coworkers, right? I don't go to an office and like talk about the latest TV show. Like, there's an aspect of social life that, compounded by COVID, you know, the world kind of got small, and it's getting better, but like, our life just looks different. Plus we had a baby. Like, there's so many reasons.
Kids and COVID is a recipe for loneliness. Yes.
Yeah. So that's like the people side of it now is like less amazing, but in my past life it was amazing. I worked with amazing people, and I should do a better job of keeping in touch with them. That's the thing that's popping in my head now. But
I mean, the flip side of that is you do spend time with your wife and your daughter that you otherwise wouldn't. So there's a total trade-off there. Yeah,
there is a trade-off, and we've already talked about it. Like what way I went. On that. Exactly. And I don't, no regrets there. It's just something you got to spend time reflecting on some of these things, right? Making sure that, you know, if my cup isn't at least half full, then I'm probably not bringing my best game to my family too. So like, there's, you know, trade-offs no matter what you do, and you just got to, you know, continue to do your best.
Yes.
But then, you know, now it's definitely, you know, my life is more driven by like product and profit. And I really liked the way you talked about profit too, because people hear profit and immediately it's just a dollar sign, right?
Yeah.
And if I had continued chasing the life that I had been living, profit would probably be higher in the dollar sign category. But now I have tons of flexibility and I get to do, you know, my in-laws fly into town. We hang out.
So great.
You know, fly to hang out with my parents. We unfortunately don't live near either sides of our family. So those sorts of moments are important to me. And 2 weeks vacation is not going to cut it for how many times I will likely be able to see my parents in person for the rest of my life. Right.
So great.
So those are, yeah, that's a, you know, I keep coming back to it. It's clearly an important piece. But then, concentrate on making sure that our current businesses and any future businesses that we acquire are providing value. They aren't just churning more junk into the world.
Yeah.
That's another guiding principle for us.
I love it.
As part of, you know, that's inside your framework here.
Yeah. I love it. Really, really great analysis. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for that. I'm curious as you're, and you can tell me if this is a true contrast, but I'm just thinking of you, you know, going from the hedge fund life to the, you know, the acquisition entrepreneur life. And like, it feels like it could be a movement towards, and I already used the word scrappy entrepreneurship to describe myself.
But it's true.
I'm curious if that feels true of your transition as well.
100%.
Like, do you feel like you've had to get more scrappy?
Yeah, 100%.
And is that hard? Is it hard to move that direction? Because I feel like a lot of people try to go the other direction.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, there is an ease to the other direction, right? Like going back to, like, I had fun at my jobs because I had a budget. I could go buy nice things that provided value to my clients, my fellow employees, right?
Yes.
And it feels great to be able to do that. And it also feels great to, like, buy the thing that you know is going to work, set it up and deploy it, right? Whereas now it's totally different. Like, there's not a budget for anything. I have a ton of ideas and no money to go chase them. So it's finding ways to be able to push that ball with as minimal dollar input as possible. And yeah, I'm clearly not the TikTok influencer type, or great at self-promotion and all those sorts of things. But like, I now have a way better way bigger appreciation for those, the kinds of people who are able to drum up audiences out of thin air. Mm-hmm. Right. And they don't have to pay $2.60 per click to Google or, you know, there's some heavy costs in trying to get in front of people. But anyway, you learn and you try. And and the thing that I'm constantly trying to work on myself and tell myself is to not get down about the limitations that you currently have and just continue to focus on the opportunities. Because it's real easy to just be like, well, if I had 20 grand or whatever that particular project cost, right? Really easy to just sort of like throw in the towel right there and say like, well, I'll get there.
Yeah.
But there might be other ways.
That's so good. And talk to me about, how do you wrestle with, discouragement, the loneliness of entrepreneurship, like when there's a problem or when something's not working in the business and it's just you and your wife. Like, I don't know. I'm just curious how, this is a selfish question. This is Dan. This is the Dan Cumberland self-help hour. Welcome everyone. Cause this is just a question for me. Cause it's something I do struggle with. It's like, man, things are not clicking right now and I've got to figure this out. And I mean, like, I know that that's life to some degree. But it's also very acute when it's entrepreneurship and you're, literal families, you know, happiness, not happiness, but health and safety and
bread on the table,
security, everything. Yep. Yeah. I'm curious. Yeah. Just how you think
it's a total struggle. Here too. There are, dark days, moments, streaks, weeks, you know, they happen. Yeah. And my wife can attest to that. The most important part is we have a super strong relationship.
Yeah.
We're super open and honest with each other. The other thing that I think that I have, speaking of luck again, lucked into is she's from an entrepreneurial family. And there are certain aspects of this life that are already sort of baked into her normal.
Yeah.
Whereas I can imagine if it wasn't, this would be even a bigger struggle.
Yes. Yes.
So there's that, there's a baseline there of that I'm just lucky to have.
Yeah.
Outside of that, yeah, go back to that book or that, you know, the talking to yourself bit, going nice long walks when the sun's shining here in Seattle.
Yes. Exercise. Get it out.
Exercise. get out of the rain and gray at some point during the winter. Yeah. That's tough on me.
Yes. Same.
But yeah, I don't know. There's no, you know, I hear you and I I empathize because it's the same. And there's no, no right answer, but it's finding your toolkit to go find space or find ways to sort of get yourself out of any of those doldrums.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And yeah, I think just what you said about your wife just makes a lot of sense. And I think, you know, my wife's not from an entrepreneur family, but her dad is a pastor, which is not an entrepreneur, but like, she's very used to like living a minimal life. And that's like, so being scrappy with our household budget and things like that when necessary, like is, you have that support. And I think that's the bigger piece is just having a partner in life that, understands your goals and is on board with them is, I don't think I could do it otherwise. Because it takes a toll on the family that you both have to be on board with. So,
I'm gonna turn it around on you a little bit. So, like, let's say Dan Cumberland hits it huge, and not huge, not like you know, sell Instagram for whatever it sold for huge, like, you know, you end up doing extremely well, and your kids, you know, are some years ahead of where they currently are. And they now live a completely different life, different than how you and Stacia grew up, how you're living currently. Yeah. How do you think about how you would instill some of those values and perspectives in them, even if the world, their immediate world around them shifted?
Yeah. That's really interesting. Like if they had all the resources that, and more that they could ever want, how would we teach them to be scrappy?
I mean, to be scrappy is one thing, but also just to recognize that there's multiple ways of living, growing. Our way isn't the only way. Yeah. Things were different for us at one point. Yes. I don't know. Yes. It's so ephemeral because their world is so, you know, small up into a certain age.
Yes. Yes. I do think about it. I mean, one of my goals, you know, financially, which is, it's just one piece of the puzzle, but, is, you know, I want them to be able to have a safety net where they can take the risks that they want to take, in life, whether that means, you know, going to grad school or if it means, being an entrepreneur and starting something or whatever. Like I've found, you know, just so much, there's so much flexibility that comes from that. And a piece of that, and I think some of it is financial literacy. It's somewhat similar to what I think what you're talking about with, you know, with your friend and doing some education around is like, by learning to live with less and being okay with less, you open yourself up to more possibilities than you otherwise would be available to you because your burn rate, you know, your monthly budget is so much lower. It takes a lot less to hit those goals. And so then you can experiment and try different things. And I think that my hope would be that I could teach them that piece. Cause I think that's a big part of it. And then beyond that, as far as like, I think the identity piece of are we entrepreneurs or are we W-2, you know, like I'm not as concerned about that. I'd love for them to be entrepreneurial. I think that there's a mindset that comes along with that, but whether they're doing that in a job or outside of a job, it doesn't concern me as much. I just hope that I'm raising kids that are that understand that like change in the world only happens if they if they keep their hands on the steering wheel and you know drive their life where they want it to go.
100%.
So, yeah, those are some of my thoughts.
Exercising some of their own control and showing them that they have power.
They have control. Yeah. And I think that's a big piece, and like
feeling like they don't.
Yes. And we can talk more about this, you know, offline, but like some of the decisions we're making around school, and like my oldest is in we started him in a hybrid, like homeschool, public school. It's a public school program, but it's part homeschooled. And so it's a college schedule, and just how much more freedom he has over his time, which I think is like, I'm really excited for him to not just be experienced. Not that there's anything wrong with the classroom, with public school or whatever, but there is this bit of mentality of like, you just give your time, you just do your time. Yeah. And
then the check boxes are checked.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's not necessarily the way that, like, that's not how my life works. That's not how your life works, as we've already spoken to, right? Like, there's other ways that we check the boxes. And sometimes it takes more time. Sometimes it takes less time. But to have that kind of built in to the mindset part of his schooling, of his day in, day out routine, I'm really excited and hopeful, you know, about that. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. We've just like a week in. So week, TBD.
Yeah,
but I'm hopeful.
So. That's cool. I really like that idea though. There was some school that we, Shell and I were looking at, and it had something to do with like a week off every month, but they go year round. We have baked flexibility into our lives. I don't need a 3-month summer, right? Like,
So
it was an interesting, little bug that got planted on our brain.
Yeah. It sounds like a cool model. I love it. I love it. Well, this has been just super fun, Daniel. I know we can,
likewise. Yeah.
Yeah. Go on indefinitely. And we will. Yeah. I know we haven't actually mentioned it, but Daniel,
kids will be running around us at the time though. So.
Yes, exactly.
I'll be chasing mine with a potty.
Yes. Yeah. Oh boy. We're always tripping over potties. In our house. For folks that want to follow along with you, connect with you, is there anything that you'd like to invite people to?
Yeah, sure. Like, I don't have a huge footprint, but I love Twitter. I'm mostly a listener, but my handle is Daniel Hatke, DanielHatke. You can find me there. You know, I'm on LinkedIn, and anybody ever reaches out, I'm happy to reply.
I love it. Thank you so much, Daniel. It's been really fun to connect here.
Thank you. This is awesome.
Thank you so much for watching and listening. You can find links to everything that we talked about in our show notes at themeaningmovement.com. If you haven't left a rating or review wherever you're watching or listening, please take a moment to do that. On YouTube, you can hit that thumbs up button. On most of the podcast catchers, you can leave some sort of star rating plus a few words. And that is how people find this show. It's particularly helpful on Apple, but you can also do it on Spotify, Amazon, and a bunch of other podcast catchers. Our music is by Tom Rorum. Our artwork is by Eliezer Ruiz. We'll be back with you shortly. Thanks so much.